How do we become a sustainable world? As the stakes for our survival continues to rise, so does our global consciousness. We are in the midst of a great spiritual awakening and are laying the foundations for a happy, peaceful, just, and sustainable world. With clear vision, determination, and a positive attitude, we are making sustainability happen. The transformation is already underway. You are listening to Sustainable Futures.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. You can also find us online at www.cjsf.ca, or you can call us at 778-782-CJSF.
Welcome to Sustainable Futures.
Yes, welcome. This is a busy show today because there are tons and tons of events going on this weekend. It's a very busy weekend in Vancouver with lots of fun things to do.
Yeah, it's a really exciting time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Just summer closing down and people are sort of celebrating what has been and what's coming up, I guess.
Coming up on today's show, I've done a number of interviews with some of the people who are having events this weekend. First two interviews are related to BC Rivers Day. Now, BC Rivers Day is a province-wide event, and it's held every year on the last Sunday in September. One of the interviews that I did about BC Rivers Day is with Mark Angelo, and Mark Angelo is the founder of BC Rivers Day, and we had a conversation about what BC Rivers Day is, how it was founded, what the motivation was behind that, and then also how it developed into World Rivers Day. It's been a phenomenally successful homegrown event that is now in dozens of countries around the world, and it's all to help people recognize the importance of cities to our society.
Yeah, great.
So that's taking place this Sunday. And in relation to that, I've also done an interview with Celia Brower, who is with the False Creek Watershed Society. Now, the False Creek Watershed Society is a society here in Vancouver. It's an environmental group, and they are putting on a salmon celebration, which is also going to take place on BC Rivers Day, because, of course, salmon, rivers kind of go hand in hand. So yeah. It's a good opportunity to celebrate salmon as well as rivers, which is really cool. And as you'll hear, Celia talks in her interview about what salmon represent in our society and how you can use it as a metaphor for life, just swimming upstream. So, you know, as she says, I keep swimming against the current. And I thought that that was really cool.
Okay.
So there's that one. Another event that is taking place this weekend, it actually starts on Friday, is Taste of Health, which is a food and lifestyle festival. It's put on by Earth Save Canada, and it's a great opportunity for people to learn about what a plant-based diet is, how you can make great recipes out of just plants, and then also how you actually live a primarily plant-based diet.
Well, it's a really great thing. One thing that we've learned on the show is that animal-based diets is actually a bigger contribution to pollution than the actual cars. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what Dave Way, the president of Earth Save Canada, reiterated in the interview. And he talks about the importance of a more plant-based diet. But also then he talks about how it can be challenging for some people to achieve that.
Definitely.
And that they do not call themselves a vegetarian society or a vegan society. Because as he says in the interview, you know, if you implement, you know, a few days of the week where you're eating a plant-based diet, that helps.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you don't want to give up meat, you can eat a plant-based diet during the week. So there's that. Another event that's coming up, maybe you want to introduce it, that's the Swap-O-Rama-Rama.
Yes, Swap-O-Rama, which is put on by True Stitches and the Work Less Party. It's an event where you bring some stuff that you're not using that maybe you would otherwise throw away, and you go to a common area, which will be Grandview Legion Hall, 2205 Commercial Drive, and they trade with people. Other people will bring in their items also. And I tell you, I've gone in previous years, and I hope to go again this year. It's a really, really great event. One thing that goes on in addition to the swap is the skills on how to make good use of the things that you have, how to do repairs. It's actually when I was learning to knit, that's where I started, was right there.
You knit?
I knit.
Wow. I learn something new every day. Well, I think that it's cool because I love clothing, and I love vintage clothing, and love Value Village and vintage stores and things like that. So, yeah, I'm going to try to go as well, and I'm going to bring my any size bag of clean, unwanted clothing because I have a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And entry, which you mentioned, is $5.
$5 entry.
Yeah. Now, we don't have an interview about that, but nonetheless, it is an important event to mention.
Yes, definitely.
Coming up first is an interview with Mark Angelo, who is the founder of BC Rivers Day.
I'm speaking with Mark Angelo, who is the founder of BC Rivers Day. Thank you so much for speaking with me today, Mark.
Oh, nice to be with you, Kim.
BC Rivers Day is coming up on September the 28th, but this actually got started all the way back in 1980.
Yes, we started this event way back in 1980. We actually did a river trip on the Thompson River. We took a number of rafts and about 40 people with the intent of cleaning up a lot of litter and debris, primarily between Spencer's Bridge and Lytton. And it was a great outing and very successful. Everyone had a wonderful time, so everyone thought, well, hey, why don't we try and do it next year? So we went about planning a few events the following year and then a few events the year after that. And then it just took on a life of its own to the point where on Sunday the 28th, we'll have probably about 100 events taking place across British Columbia. Events ranging from stream cleanups and habitat restoration projects to educational outings and community riverside celebrations, and it's just blossomed into an amazing event, which is great to see.
That's fantastic. Why did you decide to go out and clean up the river the first time?
Well, I've been a paddler and a fly fisherman for most of my life. When I came to British Columbia back in the early 70s, part of the reason I came here was I knew it was a province with great rivers. And as one who spent a lot of time out and about on rivers, you just can't help but appreciate the incredible natural and cultural and recreational values that they have. And I also, because I do a lot of traveling by river, you know, all my life I've tended to travel by river in different countries and on other continents, I slowly gained an appreciation for the fact that I think that British Columbia has perhaps the world's finest river heritage. And I thought to have a day that celebrates the importance of our rivers, the many values of our rivers, I thought that was very appropriate. And to this day, I think to have an event like that in British Columbia that has so many great rivers, I think is wonderful. But it's also been great to see that this event that we started in British Columbia, it also sparked what has now become an international event. And World Rivers Day takes place on that very same day and will probably be celebrated in about 30 countries, and that's been great to see too.
So it was in 2003 that BC Rivers Day went national across Canada, is that correct?
Well, BC Rivers Day, when I was with the Canadian Heritage Rivers Board, we talked about the idea of a national event. So yes, we have a Canadian Rivers Day, but then we started to talk about the idea of an international event, and just about the same time, you know, that took off internationally, and slowly but surely we've been building momentum on that front as well. And actually, we have a couple of websites that might be interested to your listeners. One is riversday.bcit.ca. That focuses on Rivers Day here in British Columbia. But we also have another site you can find at www.worldriversday, all one word, that's worldriversday.bcit.ca, and that focuses on some of the incredible events that are taking place elsewhere around the world on that same day.
How did you get it to the world stage? I mean, what was the process of actually bringing it to so many different countries?
Well, it was interesting. I think a lot of people over time became familiar with the success of BC Rivers Day and just how it's blossomed. And it is a great, it has proven to be a great opportunity for people to get out and enjoy our rivers, but at the same time learn about some of the threats that confront our waterways. So we were often getting inquiries from other countries about launching a similar event. Also, the UN had a major initiative back in 2003, the International Year of Fresh Water, and I talked to some of the people involved with that initiative about this idea of an international event. And we do have World Water Day that takes place in March, but the idea of having a World Rivers Day that takes place in September, that being a shoulder season, you know, pretty much around the world, and everybody thought if you're going to have a World Rivers Day, you can't really do it in June or July because while the weather might be good in half the world, you know, it's not so good in the other half. Whereas September is a shoulder season, it's pretty much a shoulder season everywhere, and the idea of a World Rivers Day celebration at that point year in terms of hitting as many countries as possible made a lot of sense to people, and they thought that given we had BC Rivers Day going at the same to a point that why not launch a World Rivers Day on the very same day. I also approached a number of agencies of the United Nations, the United Nations University as an example, as well as the International Network on Water, Environment, and Health, and they endorsed the concept, and then it just took off from there. And once you got UN agencies involved, and plus we have this really extensive network of river-related organizations around the world, we started to spread the word, and it's pretty much become a grassroots-led event, and a lot of countries have run with it. And as I said, this year we may have between 30 and perhaps as many as three dozen countries involved, and that's countries ranging from Canada to England, and from Poland to the United States, Taiwan to Australia, and from Togo, West Africa, to the Caribbean island of Dominica.
Wow, that's incredibly extensive.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited about it, and to think that all of that has unfolded from an event that has its roots right here in British Columbia, that's really exciting.
Yeah, definitely. If we think about rivers, you know, rivers play such an important role in our society, but can you explain what do rivers do for us? What are the values of a river?
Well, our rivers, you know, and once again, we have an amazing river heritage, as I said, in British Columbia. When you think about it, our rivers have incredible natural values and environmental values, no question about it. They have incredible cultural values. They have amazing historic values, recreational values. Many British Columbians paddle, they fish, or they simply walk along rivers or look at them on occasion. So they have many different values. I also think rivers have done a lot to make us what we are as British Columbians. When you look at, as an example, when you look at historic settlement patterns in British Columbia for both Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people, for the most part, that has taken place along rivers. And that, in turn, I think, has shaped how we think about water, about wilderness, about salmon. So our rivers have amazing values, and at the local level, pretty much every community in British Columbia has a local stream that runs through their community or close to their community. Once again, a stream that locals spend a lot of time on. And I think, you know, waterways like that add greatly to the quality of life that we enjoy. You know, I live here in Burnaby. I live not too far from Deer Lake. And we have a number of small creeks and streams, you know, in Burnaby that I walk along on occasion. And many of them still have quite a natural feel about them. And I think it's wonderful that we've managed to retain features like that, not in all of our communities, but in many of them. And I think that just adds to what makes the quality of life that we enjoy here in the Lower Mainland and elsewhere in British Columbia so special.
I would agree. So then what are some of the main threats that are affecting our waterways?
Well, rivers face an array of threats. You know, obviously things like pollution, urbanization, a loss of riparian or streamside habitat, the building of dams, the excessive extraction of water. Rivers do face a lot of threats. Also, too, because rivers are long linear features and they often cross many different jurisdictions, you know, they're not the easiest feature to manage. I mean, they can be a challenging feature to manage. But that said, you know, I think we have to do everything possible to protect our waterways and to address the problems that they face. One initiative that we do every spring is that we release BC's annual Most Endangered Rivers List, and that's based on input that we receive from around the province. It's an incredibly extensive initiative that takes about 6 months to compile, but usually the very end of March or early April, we release that list. And if you look at some of the rivers on the list this year, you know, there's rivers like the Upper Pitt, just on the other side of Pitt Lake, which faced a very controversial power project proposal that shortly after the list came out, you know, the government indicated that it would not go ahead. It's still alive. It hasn't been totally dealt with, but, you know, I would say it's unlikely that it's going to move ahead, given that the government has stated that the power lines associated with that project couldn't go through a nearby provincial park. So, but that would have had that project, in my view, would have had a devastating impact on the river in that it included about 8 diversions, 4 of which were in fish-bearing waters. But that's one example. You know, other rivers that were on the list were rivers like the Flathead River, just south of Fernie, and the southeastern corner of the province. That's a river that faces the prospect of a very controversial open pit coal mine immediately adjacent to the river, and there's great concern that that could impact water quality. You know, there were issues like the Sacred Headwaters up not too far from Smithers, up near the Spatsisi, but that relates to a coal bed methane proposal. And when you extract coal bed methane, you have to extract lots of toxic wastewater as well. And what do you do with that wastewater, and what's the prospect of it finding its way into to local waterways? You know, another controversial issue that could be very damaging to the headwaters of great salmon rivers there, like the Nass, the Stikine, or the Skeena. And then, of course, you have rivers like the Fraser, which is still the world's greatest salmon river, but it does face an array of issues and threats in the lower river, particularly as it gets close to Vancouver, but issues around sewage and pollution, things along those lines. So, I mean, rivers still face an array of threats. Many of those are outlined in that proposal. I think the Endangered Rivers List does give people a really good idea of the array of threats that face rivers. But that said, you know, we've also made progress on other fronts. And once again, our rivers just have so many values, and I think we have to do everything we can to ensure they're properly cared for and managed.
What can people expect from this year's BC Rivers Day? Like, what kind of events are going on?
We've got all kinds of events going on. If they were to go into the World Rivers Day website, as an example that I mentioned, and you'll see there a link to Rivers Day events. And if they click onto that, they'll then see a series of updates. And if they click on the latest update, it will give them an overview of the all the events, or at least a sampling of the events taking place around the world. Similarly, the Outdoor Recreation Council, which helps us coordinate Rivers Day, their website is www.orcbc.ca, and that website breaks down all the events across British Columbia by region. But there are some wonderful events, you know. Certainly there are a number of big events along the Fraser River this year. Pretty much every community along the Fraser is having a Rivers Day event, and that's very appropriate given that this is the 200th anniversary of Simon Fraser's expedition. There are other big events ranging from the Salmon Parade and Festival in Vancouver to major events along rivers like the Alouette, rivers like the Pitt, a host of events along small rivers and streams, as well as large rivers in the province. But you know, it's interesting. While Rivers Day, I think, obviously emphasizes the need to take care and properly manage those rivers that remain in good shape, I think it also helps to emphasize that we should do everything we can to try and restore some of those rivers that have been damaged in past. And a really good example, here in Burnaby, there's a little creek called Guichon Creek that flows behind BCIT. And this is a stream that 30 or 40 years ago was severely damaged. Part of it was culverted and paved over when BCIT was built. The upper part of the stream had been channelized and dredged. And by probably, well, the early 60s, it had pretty much been converted to a lifeless drainage canal. And yet, the stream was once a very vibrant and healthy stream. You can talk to old-timers in Burnaby who used to fish for salmon and have great stories about that creek, you know, going back to the 30s and the 40s. Well, anyway, knowing that, in the last 30 years, students and staff from the BCIT Fish and Wildlife Recreation Program, along with the city of Burnaby and a number of local community residents, we've been working on trying to restore that creek. And slowly but surely, we've restored streamside vegetation, we've enhanced in-stream habitat, we've improved water quality, we've come up with management agreements with the city of Burnaby, we've daylighted or literally opened up some of the tributaries that had been paved over in past, and it's a wonderful kind of restoration story. So there's going to be a great event, a community event there behind BCIT, celebrating the restoration of this waterway. And knowing that that's been in the making for about 30 years, I think that's a really exciting event. So there's so many events, you know, on so many waterways. And as I said, events that range from stream cleanups and habitat restoration efforts to educational outings and community riverside celebrations like this one. So there's something for everyone. So I hope as many of your listeners as possible will come out and join us.
That's fantastic. Congratulations for working that long and seeing all of that come to fruition.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Kim. No, it's been great to see. And the fact that so many people are involved these days pertaining to rivers, you know, once again, while our waterways do face an array of challenges, the fact that there are so many people out there doing good things, you know, I think that's really positive. And once again, I do think that bodes well for the future.
Thank you very, very much for telling me about Rivers Day and rivers in general and the value that they hold for our society. Thank you very much.
Kim, thanks. Thanks very much for your interest.
Okay, and now Kim did another interview with Celia Brower of the False Creek Watershed Society. And here it is.
Today I am speaking with Celia Brower from the False Creek Watershed Society. Welcome to the show, Celia.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Can you tell me when or how long has the False Creek Watershed Society actually been in place?
It started 2005. It was created as a society in 2005. We've been going since then.
What was the initial reason for it being created?
Well, I started an event called the Salmon Celebration in 2004, and I had lived in False Creek for 10 years between 1990 and 2000, and I often thought that it was an interesting history that I was looking at there when I studied a little bit deeper. So I created this BC Rivers Day event, and I guess made some connections with some people who were interested in the history of False Creek and the lost streams that fed into the area. And I guess over the course of time, we decided we'd form a society and support the salmon celebration because it was a good idea.
What is the history? What did you find unique about the history of False Creek?
False Creek used to be an unbelievable natural area. It was a very large floodplain that went all the way to Clark Drive. The First Nations used to say, the tide is out, the table is set. You could basically eat off the beaches. You could eat clams and lots of sea life on the edges. Many salmon streams emptied into False Creek. There were sturgeon there. Now, of course, I didn't know that. I spoke to a Squamish elder one day, and he told me, and it's hard to imagine a sturgeon in False Creek today. There were thousands of birds. The First Nations set up fish weirs all over the place, and many on Granville Island, which used to be a sandbar. So when you dug a little deeper, and it wasn't very long ago, 1860 is when things started to change in False Creek.
And it went all the way up to Clark Drive. That's a huge area.
Yeah, well, you know, when you look at the lay of the land, and I do these days, strangely, I think cyclists do too because they have to go up and down hills.
Yes.
But you see where streams would have gone, logically. It rains a lot in Vancouver, and so the water had to go somewhere. So there were a lot of creeks. There were 57 in Vancouver.
Wow. Are they, what has happened to them now? Like, I'm sure a lot of them with construction and development, they've been cut off. But are there any still remaining?
There's one last wild salmon stream in Vancouver that's Strutt's Musqueam Creek, and it's in the Pacific Spirit Park area. And the only reason it still exists at all is because you can have permeability of the soil in an area that's forested. That's what you need for a salmon stream. You need 40% permeability of soil. What happened over the course of time, first of all, creeks often were places where people dumped garbage in the old days, although they probably would today if they had half a chance. And so they filled up with garbage, and then they had to be filled in because they started to stink and be a mess. And, of course, as the, you know, the pollution level went up, the fish level went down, and there was no need for them anymore, and they wanted to build, so they filled them in. So essentially, they'd put a big sewer drain in and cover it over. There's one creek, when you look at it, you would never believe it. It was called Mackey Creek. It started near Van Dusen Gardens, and it went in at 6th and Heather to False Creek. And when I read from the archives, I was totally stunned. The archivist, Major Matthews, said that the edges of the creek were 60 feet.
Wow.
On either side. So if you imagine 6th and Heather, you know, there's a bunch of condos there, right? Right.
Yep.
Now? And so in 19-whatever, when Mackey Creek went into the False Creek, it was a ravine 60 feet on either side. So when they were building and excavating, they just dumped stuff in there. That's what they did in those days.
It's hard to imagine what it looks like now and what it would have looked like back then. Because I used to live actually at Willow and 7th, and I mean, it's hard to imagine, you know, what you're describing.
Right, right. But it wasn't long ago. In Vancouver, it's very recent. And if you go up to the Elijo Valley, for example, further up from the Squamish River, it drains into the Squamish River. Mm-hmm. Those are the original Squamish lands. And there was a project called the Witness Project that they encouraged you to go up there and camp. And they compared it to False Creek because False Creek used to be Squamish territory. You know, people used to fish there as well. So, you know, they said, essentially, if we don't change our philosophy of the way we do things, the Elijo Valley, with its beautiful big old trees, although some of them were logged, will end up looking like False Creek. There's a philosophy and there's a mindset that creates realities. Like, I mean, it's a beautiful area in some ways. There's lots of people living really nicely there, but it used to be a beautiful natural area, and it's not anymore. So we have to watch out because places like the Upper Squamish River will become places like Vancouver, because that's what we do. We kind of go in and clear cut the territory and set up for people, because there's a lot of us.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the philosophy that you're referring to, the mindset of development.
Well, it's the industrial economy, essentially. The economy that uses, I heard a new term the other day, it's called old sun. Essentially, we as humans and mammals, we should be using the sun that's shining today for our energy, and yet we go deep in the earth and we bring out hydrocarbons and coal and so on for our energy sources, and that's allowed us, our population, to get very high and to create this industrial economy that looked good in the beginning, but it seems to be our nemesis. It's kind of taking over us, creating a lot of us. World population has doubled in my lifetime, and I'm not that old, so it's a little scary, but I have a sense that, you know, the human resources are what you need to tap these days. We don't have the natural resources as much anymore in Vancouver, but we have a lot of human resources, and there's a lot of really good thoughts and minds, and they can change the way we live.
Mm-hmm, that human ingenuity.
Mm-hmm. We should use it in the right way, in my opinion.
So how does the False Creek Watershed Society aim to educate people about False Creek and about what it looked like in the past and how important it is to conserve what we have right now?
Well, we're a very small nonprofit, so there's only so much we can do. But we've done a small educational project. It was called False Creek Watershed Connection, that we'd like to, because the kids, you know, in primary school learn about their history. And we want to make it a little bit more place-based. I mean, we do a lot of history of around the world, and we do some local history, but it's not always on the land you're sitting on. The salmon celebration is a big part of what we do because that brings a lot of awareness. It brings people to the thoughts. And in a positive way, we're trying to connect them with people who are working for salmon and wilderness and urban sustainability awareness. There's a lot of groups out there. But that's part of the reason I started this event, because you hear about all these groups, but you don't always see them doing their work. And this is a place where you can talk to them and see what they're doing, because there's a lot of good work being done. But it is a lot of activism. It's a lot of swimming upstream, I call it, because you're moving against the force of the industrial world, which is pretty strong. So we also have an initiative in Earth Day area in April called the Interspiritual Blessing of the Salmon, and we invite spiritual leaders to come down and speak about the fingerlings that come down the rivers. We don't see them as much, but there are millions of them that come down the rivers in the spring in order to go out to the ocean to live their life cycle. So we put our hands in the water and bless them, and we talk about them and so on. So that's another public initiative.
I read on your website that you do a number of walks.
We did this year. I've heard about these. I was inspired by the Jane's walks that happened, I believe, in May. And that was inspired by Jane Jacobs. She said that you should just take a walk in your own community. And I know that there's a lot of Lost Streams historians in Vancouver, fascinating people. So I asked four of them to help us walk through I call it walk on the wild side. And, we talk about a lot of Vancouver issues, you know, with great earnestness and importance, things like homelessness and affordability of housing and transportation. Those are all really important issues. But talking about our history and our natural history is an inspiration because it just makes people start thinking along different lines. I think it helps us deal with our difficult problems. So the four historians I gathered were quite eager, and it seems like last week we had we asked people to register, and they were supposed to be doing that on the web, and 32 people registered and 30 more showed up, so we had 62 people on the walk.
Wow.
Which was quite overwhelming, and if I know that that's the case, next year maybe we'll make it bigger and more frequent and so on. But that was nice to see.
That's a fantastic turnout.
I know. It was a little... I think the guy was a little... This is Terry Point from Musqueam Creek. He was like, whoa, it's hard because it's a small creek and you have to take people in. So we had to take people in little sections. So it made it a little more difficult. But, it was nice to see the enthusiasm on the part of the people who came.
And how inspiring it is as well, I'm sure, to know that people are interested in that history and learning more about the city that they live in.
Yeah, and really at the bottom, just learning about the human history, although the human history incorporates the First Nations, which we often don't incorporate. Because often when we look at our history books or plaques or whatever, they talk about the first person born in Vancouver, European descent. But, we have to mention the fact that for 10,000 years there were First Nations here. There's a very rich history that we have. And I think, we can talk about the cathedrals in Europe and they're beautiful and wonderful. But we had 1,000-year-old trees that were magnificent. So that was our history. And then on Sunday, Bruce McDonald will do a walk through Brewery Creek, which is, we call it once a wilderness stream, now it's Main Street and Fraser. And so he'll tell you, he's an unbelievable historian as well. So unearth all the, you have to use your imagination, unearth all the history.
Definitely. With the salmon celebration coming up, what can people expect with that?
Well, it's essentially an earth and water festival. It's... it's to encourage people to come and connect with each other because we're all on this earth and the earth shows us common problems. We can't talk about groups anymore. We all breathe the same air and we all drink the same water. And we all live in a watershed and quite a lot of us eat fish. We have to start talking about these things if we expect these things to keep on going in a healthful manner, especially fish, because it's a big problem there with the oceans and the depletion of the oceans. And the salmon. Salmon are, as you know, the numbers are going down terribly. They expect, they expected 4 million sockeye back. Now they've got 1. It's scary. It's really scary how the numbers are dropping. But, we shouldn't be too surprised. We're not really, salmon aren't part of our world anymore other than that orange slab on the styrofoam tray in the grocery store. So it's essentially an afternoon where we put salmon back on the agenda, where we invite them to our celebration, and where we talk about them. They don't live in our neighborhood anymore. We don't have to steward our own stream. So they're not really around. So this is a time to put them back in. They don't come to events at our community center. It's a time to put salmon back on the agenda, to invite them to our party and to talk to each other, because this is lots of different groups who come and lots of different age groups, cultural groups, community groups, whatever. We want everybody to talk to each other about these issues because they're important. So this is a time to do that.
Are there going to be any special events on that day?
We've got some of the usual ones, some new ones. We have lots of crafts for the kids. We've got the First Nations participation, Mushum's Little Jiggers. It's a wonderful group with Métis kids singing and jigging, Nishka dancers. I should probably, the Guamish Nation canoe family will come in their canoe And there's a folk singing group called Fraser Union, who's going to join us for half an hour, which is really very special because I heard them at the Folk Music Festival, and I thought, you know, there were some wonderful folk songs that were written about living on the coast, and you often don't hear them. There's a woman from Trail who's Métis, who Arlette Alcock, who will be joining us for a half an hour set, and she's written some special songs for this event, so look forward to that. There's lots of things on the sidelines. There's lots of the environmental groups will be coming with their tables. We've got a pretty good lineup this year. So there's lots happening, and like I said, essentially it's a place for connection. You know, that's what'll be happening on the stage, but the conversations between people is what we want to encourage.
Where exactly is this again?
It's in Vanier Park. It's close to the Maritime Museum, and there's a little bay where the canoes can pull up from the water, so that's why we chose that spot. It's like the entrance to False Creek. It's a lovely spot, and we hope for good weather because we're outside.
Definitely cross our fingers for the good weather.
Mm-hmm.
So where can people go if they want some more information about the Salmon Celebration?
They can go on the website. I should be posting the schedule reasonably soon, and there's information about the Lost Streams Walks. You can find out about all of that and some background, and you can download the poster if you like.
Just as a last question, what can people, or before I get to that actually, what do salmon represent in our society, or what should they represent in our society? Can they be used to see a broader solution to our current situation?
I think so. For some reason, they speak to me quite loudly, maybe because I listen. But essentially, they represent the wild part of ourselves. They are a wild, they're the last wild food we eat. We don't eat wild food. We used to all be tribal people on this planet in some form, and all our ancestors were tribal. And we don't eat wild food much anymore. Fish are the one thing that we do eat. So they connect us to the wild part of ourselves, to the earth. They're a real survivor species, too. You give them half a chance, and they will come back. They've come back to many areas that they were eradicated from. They're an amazing fish, really, when you think about their life cycle. We are totally in awe of what they do, how they survive. Huge numbers of fry, fingerlings, and then you know, very few spawners, and yet they keep going. But we've interfered with their life cycle tremendously with all our industrial reality, human detritus, I guess, and pollution and ecosystem loss and fish farms, and it's overfishing, and now global warming. So they are an indicator species. If they're not doing well, we're not doing well. So it's up to us to take a good look at them. There's many wild animals that you can point to. You shouldn't just point to salmon. But salmon are, especially on the West Coast, they're a very inspirational creature. So I think we should take our inspiration from them and keep on fighting upstream and doing what we have to do to turn our society around.
Mm-hmm. What can people do to create a more salmon-friendly community, as you have on your website, that salmon-friendly community?
Well, there's a place in Oregon that they just call themselves Salmon Nation. They're not really a place so much as a website. They encourage people to join the Salmon Nation. And I've often thought of this. If we do things in our little world and in our businesses, in our individual world, in our businesses, and in our governments, we can become more of Salmon Nation, because if it's friendly to salmon, it's friendly for us. So if we're driving too much and we have no public transportation, that's not friendly to salmon. You know, how could it be? It's creating greenhouse gases. It's taking over ecosystems. It's paving things over, right? It's creating pollution. So it's not friendly to salmon, then it's not friendly to us. So there's lots of things we can look at with that regard. David Suzuki's Nature Challenge on our site, for example. You know, there's so many places you can go to find out what we personally can do. But obviously, and we influence each other. There's no question about it. However, you know, we also have to influence our government systems, maybe even recreate them a little bit. To not be so top-down, to be more inclusive in the with the communities. And our business, you know, what are our businesses doing? Are they green? Are they greenwashing? You know, what are they, like those restaurants, are they, I mean, there's a group called Green Table, for example, that I learned about recently, and they're trying to encourage restaurants to do what they can in their restaurant to make everything more sustainable. You know, it's a change of attitude. It's a real change of attitude. It's not impossible. But it's all, you know, everybody's got their part. Every single person got their part. You know, there's an interesting quote by Utah Phillips that was on the back of the T-shirts at the Folk Music Festival this year, because he passed away. He was a folk singer, and I certainly took it to heart. He said, "The earth isn't dying, we're killing it. And all of those who are killing it have names and addresses." So essentially what he's saying is we are all responsible for what's happening out there. Some of us do a little more, some of us a little less, but we've all got to look at what we're doing and start recreating our reality so that we can all become salmon-friendly, and therefore, ultimately, that will make our own world better and for the children coming behind. Because, you know, what is the legacy we're leaving them? And what are we doing to our fish and wildlife, too, when we do what we do? Is it okay to do business and just forget about fish and wildlife? I don't think so, because that's because they don't vote or they don't sit at our boardroom tables. That's pretty sad. I mean, religions for thousands of years and spirituality for thousands of years have said that you shouldn't do that. So I'm not quite sure why we're doing it, but we're doing it, so we need to reevaluate what we're doing. It's not just good for business, because there's no business on a dead planet, which is what David Brower from the Sierra Club, I believe it was the Sierra Club, said.
Thank you so much, Celia, for sharing your perspective today. Very good opportunity to learn more and connect.
It's a beginning. It's the beginning of the journey. Okay.
Beginning of the journey upstream.
Of an individual journey to open your thoughts and your mind to all these questions.
Thank you so much, Celia. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
Now our third interview of the program is with Dave Way, president of Earth Save Canada.
I'm speaking with Dave Way. He's the president of Earth Save Canada. Can you tell me, first of all, what Earth Save Canada is all about?
Well, we're an educational nonprofit society that tries to promote a plant-based diet for reasons of protecting the environment, animal welfare, and health. So that's basically our three pillars, and we educate on how one could move towards a plant-based diet.
I read a quote on your website that I thought summed it up really, really well. It said, "The reduction in meat consumption is probably the most potent single act individuals can take in the effort to halt the destruction of the environment and preserve our precious resources." Could you talk a little bit about how it can help?
Well, John Robbins wrote A Diet for a New America back in 1987, and even then it was very clear that the raising of animals for food had an enormous impact on the planet. At that point, it was seen as more local in terms of erosion, loss of topsoil, runoff, polluting the water, and effects like that. And now it's realized that it's even bigger than that, that it's global. A report from the Food and Agriculture Organization, which is a part of the United Nations, reported in 2006 that raising animals for food is the single largest cause of global warming gases worldwide at 18%, which is even larger than all forms of transportation combined at 13%. So when people think of how to protect the environment and decrease global warming, they usually think of things like driving a car less. And those are all, you know, that's the kind of effect that's important. But looking at our food is even more important.
So why do you think that it's not been raised to the level of awareness as transportation in terms of the contribution it makes to global warming?
I think there's an intuitive connection with cars because we know they're artificial. We know that they're pumping out exhaust constantly, and so we can see that that is releasing gases into the atmosphere. It's a little bit more hidden with food, and with the raising of animals, most of it is not done within our sight. So we may be aware of it at an intellectual level, but it's not part of our lives. And I think it's also something that we don't want to explore, because if we find out too much about the effects of our food, we might have to actually look at changing our diets. And most people are pretty comfortable with where they are, the food that they've been raised on, and having to change might take them out of their comfort zone.
I've heard people say food is one of the most intimate things that you do on a day-to-day basis. How do you help people make that connection?
Well, I think that that's true. We have a lot of associations, positive and negative, with food, even going back to our childhood. I know that sometimes I smell certain foods and immediately takes me back to when I was 8 years old. And those kinds of connections, people need to feel are available to them. They don't want to lose the happy and positive experiences that they know from their childhood. So I think we need to make it clear that changing one's diet does not necessarily mean deprivation. It does not mean a completely unfamiliar diet or food that is not going to give pleasure. And that's one of the big effects or benefits of our event called A Taste of Health, because it allows people to experience firsthand a lot of delicious plant-based foods that are out there. A certain number of our members are going to be vegetarian or vegan, but we are not a vegan or vegetarian organization because we feel that moving towards a more predominantly plant-based diet has enormous environmental benefits and other effects, and it doesn't have to be 100%, whereas being a vegetarian is a 100% position. Either you don't eat meat or you do. And it would be much more beneficial if all Canadians cut their meat and dairy intake by, say, 20 or 30%, then have a handful of people become vegetarian.
Maybe people think that it's an all-or-nothing type thing, where if you're going to eat a primarily plant-based diet, you can't eat any meat. But that's not true, obviously.
No, I think that we already know that our other aspects of our diet are fairly mixed, and we may only eat 5% of our diet is sweets. And it doesn't have to be all or nothing. A lot of people are transitioning and cutting down their meat. It's amazing how many people tell me all the time, I'm eating less meat than I used to. And they don't worry about suddenly going vegetarian or something like that.
How have you seen the plant-based diet movement grow over the last few years?
I think there's a lot of awareness, and that's making options much easier for people. When we go to restaurants, it's very rare that you can even go into a pub or places like that that don't have a veggie burger, whereas 15, 20 years ago, that wasn't the case. I've been doing a road trip, giving talks on the climate change and food this summer, and all over BC in small towns, it was always possible for me to find something vegetarian or even vegan. So it's definitely becoming a greater part of people's consciousness, and the options are becoming much more available as well.
And with that, more people are coming on board?
I would think so. I think it's when it seems like an extremely difficult choice, people are less likely to explore it. But when they think that they could just dabble a little and it wouldn't be a terrible inconvenience, then they're much more likely to give it a try.
So tell me, what are some of the things that Earth Save Canada strives to do event-wise to raise that awareness amongst people?
We have an ongoing series of vegetarian potlucks that occur at the building where our office is in Kitsilano at 6th and Maple. And we have guest speakers at those events, and people can come and share in a wide variety of foods of all different cuisines of the world. So that's a pretty good opportunity to explore some new foods that might not have occurred to them. And then we have events that are even easier for newcomers to plant-based foods to try, which are dine-outs in restaurants, where we arrange ahead of time with a restaurateur to offer us a multi-course vegan meal, because that's fully inclusive of all of our members and others. And they just come to the restaurant, pay the set amount, and sit down and enjoy a meal and talk with a wide variety of people with interesting perspectives.
One of the things that I saw on your website was the Breakup with Meat Week. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's a new challenge. It's been offered in other municipalities and regions as well. But the idea there is just in advance of our major event, which is the weekend of September 28th, to try going without meat for 7 days. It seems like a huge obstacle to people to say, I'm giving up meat forever. But to say, I'm going to give it up from this day to 7 days from now when this day occurs again, that's a small window, and it might be more appealing to some people to try.
Would you find that when people try it, they go, that's easy, and then it kind of gets them going? What's the reaction to people when they actually start to try to eat a more plant-based diet?
I think it depends on the person's attitude and why they tried it. Most people find that, yes, there's far more foods that they were already eating than they imagined that were plant-based and vegetarian. Some folks find it a bit of a struggle, but I think that's all based on effort. If you want to, you can find lots and lots of cookbooks in bookstores and libraries and online and try any number of dishes. So for 7 days, it shouldn't be a very, very difficult thing to find enough food.
And And so let's talk about the Taste of Health and Lifestyle Festival that's taking place coming up weekend, the 26th to the 28th of September. What kind of events are you having there?
Well, first of all, it's our 10th anniversary Taste of Health, so we're having a gala event on the Friday night where we have Howard Lyman, who's quite well known as the Mad Cowboy, who was on the Oprah Winfrey Show many years ago, and the two of them were sued for food disparagement and acquitted. And he'll be our guest speaker. He's very entertaining. He talks about his transition from being a cattle rancher to being vegan, and the benefits to his health and other aspects of his life. David Pimentel will be speaking. He's an expert on sustainable diets, and he's coming from Cornell University to talk on plant-based diets and how much resources they use and what the alternatives are. And he should be really good. We have a cookbook author named Isa Chandra Moskowitz, who's going to be doing all of the appetizers. And we have Blasted Church Wine. So for $15, folks get to come in and hear that speaker and taste the wine and these appetizers.
It's free on Friday night to the exhibition hall to see all the exhibitors and vendors there.
Right, so they can get some idea of what vendors are going to be offering free samples of food, and the gala event is next door, as I said, for $15. And we're hoping that they will see that there's so much to offer and will want to come back on Saturday and Sunday when we have cooking demos and guest speakers talking on nutrition and health and many other topics.
Where is it being held?
It's at the Croatian Cultural Center, which is on Commercial Drive near 15th Street, just where it curves and moves into Victoria Drive.
If you came on Saturday, how much would it be?
It's $7, and if you get a coupon, which are available in a number of locations, including restaurants and libraries, it's $2 off. It's also free for members. If folks want to come to the event and sign up as members, then they save the full $7 on entry.
And that's another program that your organization has. It's that member discount program.
Correct. We have arrangements with a large number of vendors and restaurants in Vancouver who offer 10% discounts to our members just for identifying themselves. So one can save the cost of a membership very quickly if you use vegetarian restaurants and other vendors around town.
What's one message that you think, or what's one message that you want listeners to walk away from after hearing this?
Well, first of all, that it's, as you said, a very powerful step one can take for protecting the environment, but that it also is a great step to take for increasing enjoyment of food. I've found that in the last 20 years that my repertoire of dishes and the flavors that I've been enjoying are far greater than they ever were. So it's a really enjoyable experience eating this plant-based food.
Thank you very, very much, Dave. This has been Dave, the president of Earth Save Canada. Thank you very much.
Thank you for this opportunity.
So take your pick. There's tons of stuff to choose from this weekend. And if you're ambitious, you can go to all of them.
Yes, just go with the flow, Follow the current. Now you should know all that is current with rivers.
Indeed. Yes. There's just tons of stuff going on this weekend. And if you would like some more information about any of the events going on this weekend, for information about BC Rivers Day, you can go to www.riversday.bcit.ca. And rivers is plural with an S. And then if you want more information about the Taste of Health Food and Lifestyle Festival by EarthSave, you can go to www.earthsave.ca.
And to find out more about the Swaparama that's happening, go to the website www.swaparamarama.org. So, I'm Ryan Fletcher.
And I'm Kim Tay.
And we are wishing you
a sustainable weekend.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. You can also find us online at www.cjsf.ca, or you can call us at 778-782-CJSF.